administrative law judge designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings, and that is an agency that is independent from the Public Service Commission. And the Public Service Commission requested my appointment to serve as hearing officer for this hearing. This is North Dakota Public Service Commission case number PU 2149. Before we begin, please make sure you have silenced your phones, and there should be an attendance sheet going around. Please sign it and designate whether you are going to testify or not. This is the hearing on the application of Basin Electric Power Cooperative for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for the construction of a 230 kV transmission line and associated facilities filed on January 27th, 2021. The transmission line project is about 26.5 miles in length and to be constructed from an existing Neset substation to a proposed North Shore substation in Montreal County, approximately 7 miles south of Ross. Let the record show that it is May 6, 2021 and a little past 9:30 a.m. Central Time at the Montreal County South Complex in Stanton, North Dakota. This is the time, date, and place set by the notice of filing and notice of hearing issued by the North Dakota Public Service Commission on March 3rd, 2021. The notice of filing and hearing for this hearing specified the following issues to be considered and determined at the hearing. The issues to be considered in the application for certificate corridor compatibility and route permit are, number one, will the location and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Number two, are the proposed facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and efficient use of resources? And number three, will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environment impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? The first step here is to make appearances or introductions. Ms. Merkins.
Good afternoon. My name is Anine Merkins. I'm an attorney in the Office of General Counsel at Basin Electric. Today I will present four witnesses for the case. Mr. Bobby Nassett will be appearing telephonically. He is our project manager. Mr. Jeremy Severson will describe the need for the project. Mr. Kevin Soli will describe the environmental work that's gone in so far for the project. And Ms. Shauna Labor is our right-of-way specialist.
Mr. Johnson.
Brian Johnson, advocacy staff for PSE.
And who's with you today?
Victor Shook.
Will he be asking questions?
I would ask that he be allowed to ask questions if necessary.
There's no objection, so I will allow it. By a show of hands, is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify today at this time? I see three hands go up. Your testimony will be taken after the completion of Basin's presentation. I encourage you to take that opportunity to tell the commissioners anything you would like them to hear. I assure you that what you say is important and will be taken into consideration by the commission. Please sign the sign-in sheet that's going around so that I can look at your name before you get up here and pronounce it correctly. At that time, when you come up, you'll be sworn in and be subject to questioning by the people up here. And you may not ask questions of the people up here. You're here to provide a short statement. If you have any questions about providing information or exhibits or photographs, please talk to me during a break. Opening comments, Commissioner Chrisman.
Good morning, everyone. And thank you, Judge. Judge Dawson explained the things that we take into consideration in deciding a project like this, so I won't discuss that any. I do want to say that our commission chairman, Julie Fedorchuk, is not here today. She is part of a family trust that has some property in the area, and so to avoid the appearance of a potential conflict of interest, she recused herself from the case, so it's Commissioner Crosius and I. The order of the hearing, for some of you that had raised your hands that you're going to testify, I've always thought that that must seem terribly frustrating. You might be calving or seeding or something like that, and you come here to tell us your thoughts, and we hope that you will. And then you have to sit while people who are being paid to be here go first, and you have to sit and wait. But there's an important reason for it, because what you might have heard around town or something like that, or even directly from the company, maybe something has been updated in the plan. And in order for your testimony to be the most useful to us, it's important that you hear what is being presented today and then are able to respond to that. So that is why we have the company go first and explain the application as it stands today. Then is when we need to hear from you. So we look forward to that. My background before coming to the commission in 2013, I'm a rancher from Hazen. And so with coal development down there, we had things move across our property and do rights of way and things like that. And they didn't always go well. In fact, when I was a boy, there was one of them. And some of the basin people have heard me tell this story before. But there was one of them that caused my parents a great deal of consternation. They were very frustrated, and they ended up not getting their way on it. But one of the stories I heard at the end was that at least the PSC listened to them and gave their points fair consideration. And so I've always tried to live up to that standard that I heard about as a boy. And so that's why we come out here. It'd be much easier to sit in Bismarck and talk to the company and make a decision. But we want to make it as convenient as possible for you all to weigh in with us. That's why we're here today. That's why we look forward to hearing from you, because having all of the information is how we can make the best decision possible. And my goal on these, and I think all of our goals, is not to see that a project gets built or that a project gets stopped. Our goal is to make the best decision possible under the law. And so thanks for being here, and we look forward to hearing from you all.
Commissioner Crosius.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'll start with saying this is a really good feeling. I think it's been about 15 or 16 months since we've been able to travel and have a public hearing versus doing it remotely, as we have for well over the past year. So it's good to see everyone in the same room. It's good to kind of get back into more of a bit of a normal situation. So I was excited about that. And Commissioner Christman laid out the criteria quite well. But we're very thorough in these applications. We look at the details. We look at the requirements that must be met. We ask the appropriate questions. And then after the hearing, we'll actually move into some work sessions. Related to the project, that's just at the commission level only. But it's our opportunity to talk about the details of the hearing today and to work through any questions we may still have, which invariably we will. I am excited about the project from an economic standpoint, and while that isn't a part of the criteria in our evaluation, this project represents growth in Western North Dakota. And growth is a very good thing when you look at other parts of the country where they're not looking at economic growth projects. And this does represent the need to serve an increasing load in the area due to oil and gas development in particular. So while that isn't a criteria, and again, the requirements have to be met in all the other areas, I think just from that standpoint alone, it's good to see these types of projects coming forward. So hopefully it meets the requirements. All of the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, and we'll find out as we go through the process today. So thank you for being here. Really look forward to the public input as we get toward the latter part of the hearing today. And we'll see what you have to say as well, because as Judge Dawson pointed out, that's incredibly important to us. So again, welcome, and I'm ready to get started.
Commissioner Christman, additional words?
One thing I forgot to mention, I work really closely and really enjoy working with your District 4 State Senator, Jordan Kanianen. And ever since we scheduled this, I told him about it. He planned to be here, and he texted me this morning. Something came up, and he can't make it. But for those of you from District 4, Jordan sends his greetings.
Are there any preliminary matters or motions, Ms. Merkins, Mr. Johnson?
Your Honor, I'd move to enter exhibits 1 through 14 into the record, please.
Okay. And we have a stipulation to those?
We do, Your Honor. No objection.
So I will so mark the exhibits I have in front of me, 1 through 14, and they are admitted. Ms. Merkins, you may make an opening statement or call your first witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to call my first witness, Mr. Bobby Nassett, and he will be appearing telephonically.
Mr. Nassett?
Good morning. Are you guys able to hear me and see me?
I can see you and hear you.
Great.
Before you begin today, I'm required by law to tell you the penalties for perjury in this state. Perjury is a Class C felony punishable by a fine of up to $10,000 or a term of imprisonment of up to 5 years or both. Do you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
I do.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Ms. Merkins, you may begin.
Mr. Nassett, would you please provide your name, business address, and occupation?
My name is Bobby Nassett. I'm the civil engineering supervisor at Basin Electric, and our headquarters is located in Bismarck at 1717 East Interstate Avenue.
Would you please describe your educational background and professional experience?
So I received my Bachelor's of Science degree in civil engineering from North Dakota State in 2005. And since then, I've been employed as a civil engineer, first for a consulting firm, and in the last 5 years for Basin Electric. The majority of my experience is in the design and construction of high voltage transmission lines, as well as supporting substation design and then grading and drainage and underground utilities for power generation facilities. I'm also currently a licensed professional engineer in North Dakota and Colorado.
Would you please describe your responsibilities for the proposed project?
I'm the project manager and project coordinator for this project. So my main responsibilities are managing the schedule and budget for it and reporting to Basin Electric senior management. Also responsible for coordinating the efforts of the different teams in Basin, which include our engineering design team, surveying, permitting and environmental work, and right-of-way acquisition.
Mr. Nassett, would you please provide a general description of the proposed project?
Yes, so this project was developed and selected through a study process with Southwest Power Pool, or SPP, which is the regional transmission organization that coordinates transmission studies in our region. And so this is a process that my colleague Jeremy Severson will be able to elaborate on today in his testimony, but essentially they identified this and selected this project to address regional reliability needs for load growth in the area. Physically, the project consists of, as you guys have mentioned, 26.5 miles of new 230 kV transmission line that will go from an existing substation called Nesset Substation to the proposed North Shore Substation. So North Shore is a new substation that will also be constructed as part of this project.
And Mr. Nassett, would you please tell the commission the general location of the proposed project?
The entire project is located in Montreal County. It begins at Nesset Substation, which is approximately 4 miles east of Tioga. And the new North Shore Substation is approximately 8 miles south of Ross. And I think you can reference in the pre-filed exhibits, Exhibit 6 shows a good location map of the route and the substations.
Thank you. Would you please describe the proposed schedule and when Basin Electric would like to start construction?
Our plan is to start construction late this summer or early fall and complete the construction for the substation and the transmission line by October 31st of 2022. And then have post-construction testing and have energization ready by the end of the year next year.
Thank you. Would you please describe the cost of the proposed project?
Our total estimated cost, which includes the substation work and the transmission line, is $57.4 million.
Mr. Nassett, would you please describe the design of the structures that will be used for this project?
So all the structures used on this project will be galvanized steel poles. For this project, we're utilizing both an H-frame configuration and monopole configurations. And I think there's examples of these as an exhibit in the hall and also in our application figures 4.2 and 4.1. And they'll show the typical geometry for these. So the spacing between the conductors phases are standard for this voltage class, and they provide sufficient electrical clearance for operation and maintenance. On this project, all the angled structures will be placed on drilled concrete piers, and all of the tangent and inline structures will be directly embedded.
Mr. Nassett, how many structures will be needed for the proposed project?
Our design is for 155 structures.
And Mr. Nassett, did Basin Electric consider placing this project underground?
So this transmission line, when it was evaluated for costs and benefits in the regional transmission study, was always planned for overhead construction. The underground construction for high voltage transmission such as this is significantly more expensive and wasn't considered for the project.
Would you please describe Basin Electric's considerations when routing the proposed project?
Yes, we route the transmission line first, obviously, to meet the PSC avoidance and exclusion criteria, and basically to minimize our environmental impacts and to accommodate existing land use the best we can. So the majority of the routing is really based on landowner feedback we get and following quarter lines and property lines. We try to optimize the project cost by minimizing the number of angles and considering the long-term access and maintenance of the transmission line. So a challenging and rugged terrain is avoided when all possible.
Mr. Nassett, would you please describe the proposed sequence of construction for the transmission line?
Yeah, we'll likely start with a contractor that will install gates along the transmission right-of-way and corridor wherever we cross fence lines. And in parallel with that, or shortly after, we'll stake all of the individual structure locations. And then once we have our general contractor selected and awarded and they mobilize, they'll start with the foundation installation for the angle structures. Once the foundations are complete, the structures will be hauled to each individual location, and then on site they'll be framed and assembled with the hardware for that structure and erected. Once the structures are up, the conductor, so we have three phases of a conductor, and then we have two overhead shield wires, one which is an optical ground wire. So they'll all be strung through rolling blocks that are attached to the structure, and they'll be brought up to our design tensions. And once we've met those tensions, they can be clipped in. And then after that, there are several quality control steps and inspections by Basin Transmission maintenance staff, both for the transmission line and the substation, and then the line is energized. So the contractor may work in sequence or in parallel for some of these activities, and then the final step will be ground reclamation.
Mr. Nassett, would you please describe the construction procedures and the workforce needed to construct the project?
Yeah, generally, as I mentioned, that the construction will be done in a sequential manner, consisting of a series of crews spread throughout the line. Some contractors may work several activities in parallel. It's really up to them how they approach the construction of the project. And so therefore the crew size and the number of crews depends on their specific means and methods for construction. And the actual manpower that they use varies from project to project and depends on their time constraints and their own procedures.
What will Basin Electric do to ensure safety on the construction sites?
Yeah, so Basin Electric participates in the Energy Coalition for Contractor Safety, or ECCS program. So that's a group of North Dakota energy and utility companies that work together to establish an OSHA-based safety standard. And the program has requirements for contractors and their employees and subcontractors. And all of the potential contractors that we'd consider for the project will be evaluated against that safety program through a pre-qualification program. And then if only the contractors that are able to meet that standard will be allowed to bid and work on the project. We also will require the contractor, the selected contractor, to submit an emergency response plan. And we have 911 addresses at both substations. And the line route and structure locations are submitted to local emergency management services if they're able to use them, so that they have a geo-reference location of all areas of the project.
And will you please describe the steps that Basin Electric will take once construction is complete?
So once construction is complete, Basin Electric and our construction coordinator and maintenance staff will review the right-of-way and the structures and installation and identify any items that require corrective action. Once those actions have been completed to satisfy the contract, the contractor can be released from further responsibility. And at that time, Basin Electric's right-of-way division will employ a second contractor to work through reclamation as needed along the right-of-way. And that's a process that my colleague Shauna Labor will be able to elaborate on in her testimony as well.
Thank you. Your Honor, I have no further questions of this witness.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. If you aren't able to answer any of my questions and there's somebody better suited, please just let me know. What's the status of the easements for the project? Are they all secured at this point?
At this time, we've secured approximately 85% of the easements on the project.
Are there any anticipated difficulties, or is it just that there hasn't been enough time yet to secure the other ones?
We crossed North Dakota State Trust land in two areas that the easement is in the works, and we've complied with their requirements. We just don't have it formally approved yet. And the remaining landowners, from my knowledge, are opposed to granting the easement.
Okay. And with the state trust lands and school lands, what would that bring you up to for a completion of the easement requires?
I would have to defer to Shauna Labor on the percentage of that. We've tracked it different ways, both on by number of landowners and by acreage. So I think it would get us up to about 88%, but she could provide the exact number.
Have you received all of the permits and letters from all the necessary agencies to complete the project, or are there still some remaining agencies that have yet to respond?
I believe we've received all of the agency letters back. There are some remaining permits still to acquire, and that's an area that my colleague Kevin Soley can elaborate on. We have a few outstanding permits to acquire yet.
Thank you. I don't have any further questions, Victor.
Yeah. What is the width of the corridor you're requesting?
So we actually have two right-of-way widths for this project. On the north part of the project, where we're using H-frame construction, we have some longer spans, and the right-of-way width has to contain blowout under extreme wind conditions within the corridor. So we have 150 foot wide right-of-way width on that segment of the line, and the remainder of the line is 125 feet wide.
Is there a good place to show where that kind of change happens?
Sure. It's if I refer to Exhibit 6 from Nesset Substation, as you go directly east to Angle Point 6, That is the segment that's 150 feet right away. And then everything south of that will be 125 feet.
I just got to exhibit six. So you're saying from Nesset to angle point six?
I apologize, angle point five.
Okay. That would be the 150 foot right away. And then the
correct.
125.
Yeah, so that east-west segment out of Nesset is the area where they have the wider right of way.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Commissioner Christman.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I was making a note of something else when you said the estimated price tag. Did you say $57.4 million, or has that changed from the application?
That's still our estimate for the project, yes.
Okay. When asked about the potential of doing underground instead of above ground, you said it was significantly more expensive. Can you explain that a little better, what you would consider significantly more expensive on a $57 million project?
Yeah, in general, industry has a rule of thumb that underground high voltage transmission is up to 10 times or more of the price for overhead. It's really challenging for these voltages because most of the line has to be constructed in a concrete duct bank with highly specialized conductor, because instead of using air as the insulator for the conductor, we've got to have it all underground. So generally, you know, Basin Electric, we don't have any underground high voltage transmission. And I think it's typically used in highly congested corridors for very short distances, or where being overhead is physically impossible.
Are there any telecommunications facilities being attached to this or planned for it?
Yes. The transmission line, one of our shield wires, is an optical ground wire that'll provide communications between the substations and our transmission network.
Okay. And so as we upgrade this, does this cause any infrastructure that's being used now, either by Basin or by maybe one of the distribution co-ops, to become unnecessary that will then be removed? Or is everything that's there now still going to be needed even if this gets constructed?
Yes, to my knowledge, everything will still be needed. The new substation at North Shore is an improvement. Also, it allows Montreal Williams to interconnect three existing 115 kV transmission lines that are currently just served through a tap. So that's an improvement to their system as well.
Thank you. I have no other questions.
Commissioner Crosius.
Good morning, Mr. Nesset. Good morning, Mr. Nesset. On the right-of-way status, if I understood this correctly after Mr. Johnson's questioning, 85% the easements are obtained. It would be 88% with the school land. So the simple math is 12% of the private landowners, or you're still working with them?
We are. And my colleague, Shauna Labor, has been managing the communication with them. And so I'll defer to her for the status of communication with them.
Okay, that's good. I'd like to get more information on that just to get a better feel on where that is. And would she also be the one to ask about that remaining 12% and your construction timeline that you're looking at, which I believe is to begin in, is it August, is what you would intend to begin the project then?
That would be our preference, to begin in August.
Is that contingent on obtaining the final easements, or do you have contingency plans to reroute if necessary?
At this time, we don't have any plans for rerouting through the routing process. We've really evaluated all of our possible options, but you're correct. It's contingent on receiving the final right of way.
Can you, changing subjects, Can you just give a broad overview, a 30,000 foot level view of at least your impression in terms of working with the local officials, meeting their zoning requirements and that type of thing?
Yes, to date, local officials that we worked with have been very helpful with the project. And a lot of that, again, has been coordinated by Ms. Shauna Labor and also Kevin Sully, who leads our environmental and permitting effort. We are still filing the conditional use permit with the county, so that process is underway. It hasn't been completed yet. But I know Shauna has worked with the townships as well for crossing permits. And then we've also been in a lot of communication with the area gas and pipeline owners for and other overhead utilities where we've got crossings and conflicts to avoid any impacts to them and make sure that we're meeting their requirements.
And you can defer this question if you would like, if there is another witness that would be better suited. But in terms of the construction timing, not the start date or the projected end date, but can you tell me how you work with local landowners in terms of their agricultural practices, the timing of certain sections around harvest, for example?
Yeah, we definitely would welcome their feedback on when best to time that. If for whatever reason construction schedule doesn't work out, you know, we would pay for crop damages and lost production. And so that's something I think that process is definitely one that Shauna would be able to elaborate on, as that's come up on previous projects. If the schedule works out the way we would prefer to, starting in the fall, in the late fall is sometimes more suitable because we can be working on frozen ground and not impacting harvest, but they'll definitely still need access to a lot of the project area next summer for the stringing operations. And so we've got quite a bit of schedule, but we want to leave the contractor room for flexibility for contingencies that come up on the project.
Okay, thank you. And then the last question would be, on the workforce portion of your testimony, you had indicated that you believe, and if I remember this correctly, I would have to find it. And I've discovered that I'm not as adept at scrolling on my iPad with my thumb as compared to my index finger, which this is what happens when you're swinging a hammer and building corrals and your finger interferes with a 24-ounce or whatever, 26-ounce hammer and the intended impact area. So, but I'll live. But just in terms of a breakdown, what percentage of the workforce do you believe will be in-state versus out-of-state, out of curiosity?
Sure. It's sort of a guess, depending on which contractor ultimately gets awarded the project. But to date, we've also employed consultants and contractors as part of the preparation for the project. So we've hired local, you know, biologists for reviewing the line and local surveying companies that helped collect the data. This is specialized construction, so there's perhaps dozens of contractors that are qualified for overhead high voltage transmission construction, and they typically come throughout the country. Some are closer than others, and then we can't really dictate who they hire, but they will certainly look to hire local subcontractors and local work where it makes economical sense to them, and that has happened on previous projects.
Okay, thank you. I don't have any other questions.
Ms. Merkins, any redirect?
No, Your Honor.
Any further questions?
No further questions.
Commissioner Chrisman.
After the towers would be erected and you're stringing, would that be done from trucks on the ground, or would this be strung with helicopters?
That's a good question. Typically, different contractors have different operations for this, but typically they will string what's called like a sock line with a helicopter just to start that through each string block, and then the rest of it will be pulled with tensioner vehicles on the ground. But some have also, it can even be a four-wheeler along the ground to pull the sock line through the transmission line. So it's up to how they want to approach that.
Thank you.
Well, if there's no further questions, you may step down.
Thank you.
Ms. Merkins, you may call your next witness.
Your Honor, I'd like to call Mr. Jeremy Severson.
Mr. Severson, I could see that you were here for my previous admonitions as to perjury, so you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
I do.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
You may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Severson, would you please provide your name, employer, and occupation for the commission?
My name is Jeremy Severson. I'm employed by Basin Electric Power Cooperative. I'm the manager of transmission services.
And would you please describe your educational background and professional experience?
My educational experience includes a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from North Dakota State University in 2003, where I've been employed at Basin Electric. I also hold a professional engineering license in the state of North Dakota.
And Mr. Severson, what have been your responsibilities with the proposed project?
So my responsibilities have included the review of the SPP study work and feedback with SPP, as well as work with our own studies at Basin Electric that we have completed in this area.
And what information do you plan to provide today in your testimony?
So I'm going to provide some background on the SPP study process that this project came out of, as well as the update on some of the studies the basin has completed in this region.
Thank you. Mr. Severson, would you please describe SPP and its general role in the grid?
Okay. Well, SPP is an RTO, or Regional Transmission Organization. And in being an RTO, they are responsible for managing and planning the grid. SPP offers several services as an RTO. They offer an open access transmission tariff. They offer regional outage coordination. They offer a market. And in doing so, they are the transmission service provider in this region. And so they are responsible for planning and making sure the grid is reliable and secure.
Thank you. And Mr. Severson, would you please generally and briefly explain transmission planning in SPP?
So transmission planning or transmission assessment, whether by SPP or any other organization, is the assessment of the power grid through a number of engineering analysis that looks at the system. The system is a model of the transmission grid, the substations, lines, generation, load is all modeled in a series of cases. And an analysis of that includes looking at both near-term and out-year to make sure that the system can be reliable and secure. And that includes both system intact, normal conditions, as well as abnormal conditions. If you were to lose an element and make sure that the system can withstand that and continue to reliably serve the area customers.
Thank you. Would you please describe the planning and study process that this project arose from?
Sure. So this particular project arose out of the transmission services side of the SPP tariff. A request was made to SPP for a new delivery point addition, or DPA. That request was for a new substation and subsequent load in this region. That was entered into SPP's delivery point addition queue and subsequently studied by SPP. Out of that study process, in an SPP delivery point addition study process, they look at these cases, aforementioned cases, and look to see if the system can still reliably serve the system. If anything happens where you exceed criteria, SPP must evaluate options to mitigate that criteria and suggest a fix.
Thank you. Mr. Severson, what happens once SPP identifies that a transmission project needs to be constructed?
So once SPP has identified a need on the system, which means that something doesn't meet the criteria identified in the study process, they have to identify a mitigation for those needs. And in doing so, they would work with the regional or the area transmission owners and issue a notice to construct, or NTC, to the designated transmission owners. And under the SPP tariff, the designated transmission owner is responsible for constructing the project to mitigate the issues identified.
Did the specific SPP delivery point addition study that you mentioned show that there could be violations in this area that would need to be mitigated?
Yes, this particular request for a new delivery point and additional load resulted in a number of violations, both loading and voltage violations that occurred in the region.
And would you please generally describe the options that SPP investigated to mitigate those violations?
Sure. So to mitigate the loading and voltage violations that were found in the study work, SPP came up with four options. The first option was the proposed project, a new 230 line from Neset down to North Shore, as well as a 115 line from North Shore down to the Newtown area. The second option that they came up with was a new substation on the Tioga to Blaisdell line, so a new substation around the Stanley area, and then a new 230 line from there, from this area, down to, I believe it was Belden, and then a series of capacitors out on the Montreal-William system. The third option was similar to that, a new 230 substation near Stanley here, again, tapping the Tioga to Blaisdell line, and a new 230 line, again, down to Belden with a couple different configurations of capacitors. And the fourth option they considered was a new 345 line from Tioga down to the North Shore area, as well as a 115 from North Shore down to Newtown area.
And why did SPP choose NESA to North Shore project in front of us, or option one as it's listed in your written testimony?
They ultimately selected this project because it met the needs that were identified in the study work at the most economic option.
Mr. Severson, does Basin Electric perform its own transmission studies?
Yes, we do. So in addition to the working with SPP on these transmission service type studies, we also perform our own studies at Basin Electric. These include the annual transmission planning assessment, the NERC required transmission planning assessment. We also perform two different operating studies each year up in this Bakken area specifically. And we also perform an under voltage load shedding study to work with the under voltage load shedding schemes that we have up in this region.
What have Basin Electric studies shown in this area?
So our studies concur with kind of the findings of SPP. We've noted that this region is a weak spot, and it's reached the limit, the load serving limit that it can accommodate. And so we've kind of suspected that it would need a project to add additional load growth in the region. Since we've been seeing this, we've worked with Montreal-Williams to install some mobile capacitors, as well as install under voltage load shedding schemes in the area to provide continued load serving capability in the region.
Mr. Severson, how does this project affect the reliability of the transmission system in this area of the state?
So this project will increase the load serving capability of Montreal County significantly, and it will provide a more reliable and secure system.
If this project isn't built, what could happen to future development on the electric grid in this area?
So we would have to probably suspend reach a limit of load growth in this region if this project were not built.
Thank you. I have no further questions of this witness.
Mr. Johnson.
I guess more of a simplified recap than maybe a question. So this originated with SPP?
Yes, sir.
You guys confirmed that their assessment of the grid was accurate?
Yes.
And basically the point of the project is to enhance grid reliability and stability in this area?
Yes.
And also allow for future development. And if that if this project doesn't happen, that development is going to be limited, if not maybe even possible at all.
That is correct.
Basin is a SPP partner or member?
We are a member of SPP.
Okay. And if Basin would choose not to do this, is there any sort of sanctions or anything that would come from SPP for you not enhancing the system in this area?
So if Basin were not to build this project, the load request or the load limit in this area would be capped, and Basin as a transmission customer would be limited on the load serving capability of this region.
Does the project also meet future potential growth estimates for the area? It's not going to be underserving, or it meets or exceeds what's estimated to be going to happen in the future in this area?
Yes. So this project, we study a 10-year out load serving forecast, and the addition of this project would meet the needs of Montreal County in the current SP or in the current Basin load forecast.
Okay. No further questions.
Mr. Shook.
So, morning, Jerry. We're saying this didn't come out of a standard process, but the ones I'm most familiar with are the reliability assessments and then economic assessments. This didn't come out of either of those. It was a delivery point addition.
Right. This did not come out of the ITP or the long-term transmission planning assessments. This came through the transmission service section of the tariff, or referred to as Section AQ. And so they'll often hear these referred to load interconnection requests as AQ studies, and that came through that process.
From Montreal Williams Electric?
Montreal Williams made a request to Basin Electric. Basin Electric is the transmission customer for SPP, and Basin Electric made that request, that AQ request, to SPP.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And then I guess my only other question, this project would be constructed to comply with the National Electric Safety Code?
Yes.
Thank you. No further questions.
Commissioner Christman.
I was on that same line of thinking as Mr. Shook of not understanding fully this process of how this gets started. So I think I understood that last one. So Montreal Williams felt they needed another substation down there, and so they made that request to Basin Electric. Basin Electric is the transmission customer, makes the request then to SPP, and they looked into it and went through that system that you said. Yep. And then, so when SPP did their study of the problem and then the various solutions and put out a request for building this, is Basin the exclusive entity that could do this, or could someone else have bid this to build a transmission line in the same place?
So in this process, the NTC, or the notice to construct this project, goes out to the affected transmission owners in the region, and actually exhibit 8 is the notice to construct from SPP. And this lays out the two parties that were this project is assigned to. The first is Basin Electric on the 230 side, but on the south half of the project, which is the 115 from North Shore down to Newtown, is assigned to Montreal Williams.
And SPP makes that assignment of?
Based on the transmission ownership in the region. And since Basin is the transmission owner for the 230, that part was assigned to Basin Electric.
So that 115 is planned for construction as well, but that will be Montreal Williams and is not a part of
this
of our procedure, because we cite things that are larger than 115, not 115s, correct?
That is correct.
Can you just tell me, though, I have not had that really on my radar screen, I guess. So sure. That's a 115 from this new substation at North Shore to, did you say to Newtown?
To Newtown, yes.
And how many miles is that, do you know? And just a, it's not part of our process here, just an estimate.
Yeah, I would say roughly 25 miles. And perhaps Montra Williams could elaborate on that line length. They are working on that section of line.
Okay, and no other questions. Thanks, Mr. Sorensen.
Commissioner Crosius.
Well, good morning, Mr. Severson. Most of my questions have been answered. So, but we tend to live in a world of acronyms if we're on the commission or in your line of work. And the general public hears NERC, FERC, SPP, RTOs. And I think, you know, just to simplify things, if you were to meet someone at the cafe in Stanley and they were to ask you, well, why do we need a line, or why do you need to construct this line, just in a simplified way, how would you explain that to them?
Perhaps I would say that if you were to assume this table has four legs under it, and you can put so much weight on this table, and we plan to support this table with the weight of the legs underneath it. After you get so much weight, if you were to pull one of the legs out, the table may collapse or sag too far. And we need to maintain the electric grid within the limits to hold the weight. And so after you get to a certain point, you need to put something else underneath the table to support it should you lose one of the other legs. And so this new line into this area is essentially another leg under the table to support this region.
And the benefit to a household, a farming and ranching operation, or a cafe in downtown Stanley or in the region would be?
It would to maintain a voltage and loading criteria. If we were to allow the system to sag too far and you were to have voltage issues, you could have voltage flicker, you could have low voltage, which could have motors burnout, which we're trying, we maintain the electric system at a certain level to give that reliability to the customers.
That's a really good way of describing it. And again, I think it helps the general public in understanding in terms that they might be more familiar with or examples that they can relate to. So I appreciate that. I don't have any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Seeing no further questions, you may step down.
Thank you.
You may call your next witness.
Thank you. Boy, and so.
Mr. Sully, you were here for my previous admonitions as to perjury, so do you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
You may begin.
Mr. Soli, would you state your name, employer, and occupation for the record, please?
Yes, my name is Kevin Soli. I work for Basin Electric Power Cooperative in Bismarck, North Dakota. My job title is Senior Environmental Compliance Administrator.
And would you please describe your educational background and professional experience?
Sure. I've earned 3 degrees from the University of North Dakota, including a bachelor's and master's degree in geology, as well as a degree in geological engineering. I've been employed with Basin Electric for approximately 14 years, and I've worked on a number of similar projects that required these siting applications and procedures, including transmission lines and wind farms and pipelines. Before my employment at Basin Electric, I worked for about 15 years for the North Dakota Department of Health, now the Department of Environmental Quality in the Environmental Health section. And I guess I can add that I'm also a retired member of the North Dakota Army National Guard, served for 26 years and retired as a major. I guess like some of the other witnesses, I'm a registered professional engineer in North Dakota and in Wyoming.
Thank you. Mr. Soley, what have been your responsibilities with the project?
Well, really, all manner of tasks associated with the preparation of the application. And that included the coordination of three different environmental consultants, including AECOM as the consultant that prepared the application for us, and two other specialized environmental consultants, Western Ecosystems Technologies, who did biological work for us, and Metcalf Archaeological Consultants, who did our cultural resource work. In addition to the outside coordination, then of course there's coordination within the project team at Basin Electric, coordinating with engineering, lands and right-of-way, and legal.
Mr. Soley, have there been any changes to the application since it was submitted?
There have been a couple of minor changes to the route and to the configuration of the line, and probably most notably, our engineering group evaluated a new type of carbon core conductor, and so this new conductor allows for much longer spans between the structures, and so someone could correct me here, but we dropped roughly 30 structures. So that's 30 less structures on land and less environmental impact, if you will. The other change is that there was a minor alignment shift. The very last part of the corridor and route that's on the state trust land as it goes into the North Shore substation. And so we moved, at the request of the land department, we moved north about a quarter of a mile to kind of parallel the existing Montreal Williams line there.
Thank you. Mr. Soley, would you please describe the size of the corridor for the proposed project?
Yes, so the corridor has two widths. It's, as Mr. Nassett testified, it's a 150-foot width for the east-west portion. I can say a little bit about the east-west portion. I think it's a really great example of kind of the orderly siting of projects. We are immediately adjacent to an existing Basin Electric 230 kV line, the Saskatchewan Intertie line, and not more than I think a quarter mile to the south, there's an MDU 115 kV line, and so it's kind of just a perfect utility corridor for that section of the corridor and route. The north-south, or everything after that east-west portion, is all 125 feet wide.
Thank you. Would you please explain why it is appropriate for the commission to approve this corridor?
Sure. When you look at the PSC rules, there's a requirement that the corridor be 10% of the length, not to exceed 6 miles and at least 1 mile. But there was a change in the PSC's rules a few years back, and it added some flexibility for the route changes within a corridor. And based on that, or really the result of that, is that the entire corridor really needs to be surveyed for everything, and it's not practical to survey a corridor that's 2 or 3 miles wide for cultural resources. And so what utilities have done, they've kind of shifted to a corridor width that is essentially the width of the right-of-way. And having those two the same, it avoids confusion, I think, for the permits, avoids confusion for the landowner, and I think it's just a simpler system.
Mr. Soli, does the proposed route contain any exclusion or avoidance areas?
Yes, there are no exclusion areas, but there are avoidance areas.
Would you please describe the avoidance areas?
Sure. There are a number of cultural resource sites that are we feel qualify as potential avoidance areas, and we've worked closely with our consultant and with the state Historical Preservation Office to ensure the protection of the features. So in general, our transmission line would span a cultural resource site, so there would be no physical impact to the site. There are two sites along the corridor, and again, this is along that the east-west portion, kind of crossing Paulson Creek Valley and the White Earth Valley, where it's the sites are either too big or the topography would not allow us to span the site and avoid it completely. In those locations, again, in coordination with the State Historical Preservation Office, our consultant went to the site that our engineers had staked, and there was a meter by meter test pit dug to ensure that there was no kind of cultural material there, no cultural resources. And so our, in essence, concurrence letter from the SHPO office, from the SHPO, says that their, you know, basin has done a good faith effort to minimize impacts to cultural resources as long as the avoidance measures discussed are followed, which of course we would.
Thank you. Mr. Soli, did Basin Electric analyze other potential routes?
Early on, there was a look at the southern portion. We had a branching corridor, and this is shown in the what I would call the agency scoping letter. So there's the, you know, 27 agencies that get notice when we file application. And so in our request for comments, that it showed a kind of a separate corridor branching off for maybe the southern third of the route. And that jog to the east and then to the south to get to the same North Shore substation.
And would you please describe why that route was not selected?
Sure. We looked at that portion, and I will say the main constraints in this part of the country are existing infrastructure. There's just so much infrastructure on the ground, pipelines in the ground already, that it's, you know, that's really our biggest constraint. There aren't many real environmental constraints. But when we did look at the, I'd call it the more eastern route, there were a few more U.S. Fish and Wildlife grassland easements. So there would be some, you know, additional permitting there. And maybe Ms. Labor would be able to speak to it, but I think there was a bit more landowner pushback there. So we weren't even able to get survey permission, so we would really have no way to survey those areas.
Thank you. Mr. Soli, did the environmental studies for the project address any concern for threatened or endangered species?
The application discusses several threatened or endangered species, kind of two maybe to concentrate on. And the easy one first, I guess, is the whooping crane. And so everyone is concerned about the whooping crane, and overhead transmission lines are you know, a known risk to really all birds. So we looked at that. But what we will do is we'll kind of follow the kind of standard industry or APLIC practices. So our over the overhead ground line will be marked with bird diverters. So, it's kind of the best practice for that. The second one that is probably a little bit more interesting here in Montreal County is the Dakota Skipper. And the Dakota Skipper is a small butterfly. It's about an inch across. And there are actually some areas of critical habitat for the skipper in Montreal County. So all of the corridor was surveyed for habitat, and there really, I'd say, four classifications, or our consultant used four classifications for the habitat. And so there's kind of, and I'm going from the most important to the least important, but there's reproductive habitat, which is really high quality, virgin, native prairie. And then down from that is foraging habitat. So that's where they can get nectar and food. So that's another important one. And then below that, there's what's called dispersal habitat. And so many of the grassland areas that were surveyed for our project in the corridor were dispersal habitat, which is ubiquitous in Montreal County.
Mr. Soli, has Basin Electric received all the permits needed in order to begin construction of the project?
No, we haven't. So there are a couple of pending permits. The I would say that the biggest one is the conditional use permit from Montreal County. We submitted that conditional use application on April 20th. I think the hearing is scheduled for May 24th for planning and zoning. And then the following week, I believe, would be the kind of approval by the commission. So that's the big one. So there are a couple other potential permits, I would say. There is the possibility that we would do a nationwide permit with the Corps for a access. There's a stream crossing that's existing, but the landowner has asked that Basin investigate the possibility of improving it. And so we're looking at that. And so that, I think the application talks about we might need something called a nationwide 12 permit from the Corps, but that's actually changed in the last couple of months. So nationwide 12 is for utility infrastructure generally, but the Corps has broken it out now. So 12 just applies to petroleum pipelines. So I think would currently be under a nationwide 57.
I have no further questions for this witness.
Mr. Johnson.
I think you answered my question on permit status, but it's Basin's intention not to begin this construction until all permits, applicable letters, and everything are received.
Correct.
You did talk about bird diverters for the whooping cranes. Can you describe what the bird diverters are and how you figure out where they go?
Well, sure. There's they are kind of these yellow, typically spiral fiberglass. It's like a big fiberglass spring, and those springs typically those are installed with somebody leaning off the side of a helicopter, and they kind of twist them on to the overhead ground wire. So just the thinnest top wires would get those diverters, and they're I would have to get back to you on the exact spacing, but it's fairly common and. I'm thinking if we could go outside, we could probably see some in the distance.
Sure. Is there some sort of like special criteria? And I assume you don't put it on the entire length of the line.
We will. Yeah. So anything in the whooping crane corridor, we typically will just mark, and that's kind of consistent with APLIC kind of best practices.
Sure. And it says there's a little bit of corridor remaining to be surveyed in it. It sounds like that's due to probably landowner easement issues.
Correct. There's about 3/4 of a mile that we were unable to secure survey permission, and so those areas haven't been surveyed. I can tell you, though, that they are in cultivated land, so it's unlikely that there's any habitat or any cultural resources there, but they still would be surveyed.
Okay. And you don't anticipate that if that is granted, is that going to delay your project at all, or is that survey going to be able to go fairly quickly?
We would be able to, I think, complete surveys within a month. For something that small, it would go very quickly.
I don't believe I have any further questions.
Mr. Shook?
Morning. Are there any areas within 500 feet of an inhabited rural residence where the transmission line intends to go?
No, there are not. I think the closest is a little over 900 feet.
Okay. I think you addressed the other issue. So actually, just real quick, let me go back to the cultural resource sites to kind of cover that a little bit. I think I heard there were two cultural resource sites that you did a kind of a closer study and kind of satisfied SHPO that you're going to, I guess, did they take those off the list, or are you just saying you're going to work closely but not directly on them?
Right. Yeah. So the sites are kind of like an area drawn on a map. Somebody decides, well, this hilltop or this ridgetop is a site, and that site designation or kind of delineation, I guess would be a better term, was kind of based on features. So there are different rock features. It could be a stone circle, a cairn, or some other similar feature, a prehistoric feature. And so I don't want to say it's arbitrarily drawn, but there's some buffer around those features. And so we would protect those features, those known features that are within that site, in that delineated site.
Okay. And then how many other areas? There was some discussion about you were going to span some other cultural resource sites.
Correct. Yeah, there are, I think, six total that will be, kind of spanned. And again, so impacts are essentially avoided.
Okay. I have no further questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Chrisman.
You talked about that east-west segment, and someone else had mentioned earlier, too, that had the wider right-of-way. Mm-hmm. And you explained how it's adjacent to a different basin line and very near a MDU line. But I never did grasp why is it the wider right-of-way and the H-frame structures, and then the rest of the way it's the other structures and 125 feet?
Well, I'll do my best, and we may want to recall Mr. Nassett, but that right-of-way width is based on the span of the structures. So there's the certain distance between the structures, and then the longer, the greater the distance, the more blowout there can be. So if the structures are farther apart, you need a wider right-of-way, because as the wind starts loading onto the transmission, onto the conductor, we can't have it, kind of trespassing, if you will, outside of our right-of-way.
Okay. That's good enough for me. When you answered Mr. Shook's question about anything within 500 feet of a residence or occupied structure, and you said it was about 900 feet was the closest.
Correct.
So do you measure then from the outside of your right of way, or from the outside of the physical structure if you were standing under it looking up, or where do you start measuring from?
I guess I haven't made that measurement myself, but if I was going to do it, I would do it from the kind of the edge of the right of way to the structure. And in any case, that wouldn't get us close to 500, right?
And you mentioned the two outstanding permits. And so I'm assuming that this one is in, but it's one that's near and dear to me, and I'm just double checking. Does Montreal County have their own county weed board?
I guess I'm unaware of that. I guess we have a conditional use permit filed with the county, but I don't recall seeing anything in the ordinance about a specific requirement for the weed board. We can certainly, Obviously, we will be checking that after this, and if there is, we'll comply with their requirements.
Because a lot of counties do have their own weed board, and yeah. I just want to make sure that if they do, that you're working in consultation with them about any specifics to make sure that you're as aware of, as possible of any spots where there's noxious weeds that you want to be extra cautious of. No other questions. Thank sure. you.
Commissioner Crosius.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Soli. Just a few questions for you, and maybe you can help with a clarification. In terms of obtaining survey permission, did you say approximately 3/4 of a mile of the route you were not able to obtain survey permission?
That's correct.
Okay, so when I'm looking at the 88% right-of-way, in terms of the right-of-way status, easements obtained, you may not have had the easement in place, but those same landowners did grant survey permission?
That's correct, yeah. So one of the first things that when our lands and right-of-way folks are out will to be, I guess, ask for survey permission. And so survey permission is oftentimes, granted without, too much consideration, I guess.
And given the fact that, changing gears a little bit, that you applied for the conditional use permit with Montreal County on April 20th, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
It seems to be cutting it close in terms of looking at when you would like to start construction in August.
Agreed. We were close to submitting about a month before, and that was right about the time when the different conductor kind of technology came into play. And so our permit application includes the plan and profiles, it includes the structure locations. And so in order for our application to the county to be accurate, we needed to wait until that kind of design portion was complete.
Do you anticipate any timing difficulties? And I realize we may be spilling into another witness, maybe better able to answer that. But
I don't think so. I think that if it can never predict how any meeting will go or any process will go. But assuming we get through planning and zoning on the 24th. I think it's the first Monday, so it's just a week after that the county commission would be considering it. So, by mid-June, I would think we would have our answer on that.
Okay. And then, is the entire route within the Whooping Crane corridor?
Yes, it's all within the 75% portion of the Whooping Crane corridor. Yes.
Okay. And then on the blowout in terms of the lines swinging in the wind, moving in the wind, how close did they get to the edge of the corridor? I guess it could be, maybe it's a little bit different versus depending on distance between towers, but how close is that?
Yeah. I guess I don't know, but I think I know is that the blowout, if there's extremely strong winds and there can be a lot of loading on the conductors, and so the outermost conductor I think could get to the edge of the right of way, and so that's what sets that. What sets the right-of-way edge or the right-of-way width that we need?
Would it be safe to assume that, barring a very extreme weather event, a tornado, for example, that that there is a little bit of a margin of error built into that? Right.
I would think so.
In terms of the width,
I would think there's a little cushion, a little factor safety.
I don't have any other questions. Thank you, Mr. Soli.
Are there any further questions, Ms. Mertens?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Shook.
Just one quick question. You would intend to clear all trees and shrubs
for the full corridor width?
Well, the shrubs we wouldn't clear. If we can overland access, we wouldn't plan to clear there. There is no, it's a good question to come back to, I guess. Most of the access is, either along the right of way, or there are existing two-track trails, things like that. So we're not really road building per se. It's just setting the structures in the right of way.
Sure. But the trees themselves, would have to be removed.
Some trees would have to be removed. Yeah. And I think at this point, I think there are, 100 and we've looked at it once, but we'll kind of take another look here this spring, which is scheduled for the end of the month, where probably like maybe 150 areas that'll have to be looked at and kind of tree counts made.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. No further questions.
Any further questions? Seeing none, you may step down. It is 10:51 a.m. and we will take a 15-minute break till 6 minutes after the hour. Is there anyone in the audience who has not signed the sign-in sheet? Anyone? I don't see any hands waving, so...
I have something I want to say before we start.
Commissioner Christman.
Just wanted to point out, and he had to leave now, but for those of you District 4 folks here, Representative Don Longmire was in the audience. He was sitting toward the back. I didn't see him earlier, but I'm certainly interested in the process and in the case, and doing a good job representing you all.
You may call your next witness.
Your Honor, I'd call Ms. Shauna Labor.
Can you say your last name for me?
Labor. Well, as I yell it.
Ms. Labor, I saw that you were in the audience for my previous admonitions as to perjury. So do you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
I do.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
You may begin.
Ms. Labor, would you please provide your name, employment, and occupation?
My name is Shauna Labor. I'm the Senior Property and Right-of-Way Specialist for Basin Electric Power Cooperative.
And would you please describe your educational background and professional experience?
Yes, ma'am. I've received a Bachelor's of Science in Economics from Arizona State University, as well as a Bachelor's in Political Science from Arizona State University. I then have worked in aircraft manufacturing and the copper mining industry prior to becoming employed at Basin Electric in 2009. I've worked in the property and right-of-way department since 2011. And as part of my public service, I currently serve as a Morton County Planning and Zoning Commissioner. And I also am a water manager for the Lower Hart Water Resource District. Prior to that, I've served as a city commissioner in city planning and zoning, just to be completely immersed in the community.
Thank you. What have been your responsibilities in connection with the proposed project?
For this project, I was tasked with having the original route and looking for survey permission, interacting with all of the various landowners in the area, and after receiving a significant number of survey permissions, we then proceeded with the actual survey permission, where I would contact landowners, people are going to be on your land, and then I've also been in contact for the actual easement acquisition, where we negotiated the easement, and any follow-ups. We've had, some structure design changes with the new conductor and other, just as things have developed, I stay in contact with all of the landowners that are affected.
Thank you. And Ms. Labor, would you please summarize the extent of contacts that you or Basin Electric's right-of-way team has made with landowners regarding the project?
So this has been the year of strange. I initially I started in 2019, so a lot of face-to-face contact, or at least requests for face-to-face contact. When we were starting the survey permission or doing the surveys themselves, there was mailings of the maps and notifications because it was in the summer and there was it was COVID, just trying to measure that. And as the easements, the packages came out, I would give the owners the option of meeting with me or just handling it through the mail, because it has been every human's risk tolerance, or I don't know what the right word is. I haven't made as many face-to-face contacts as I normally would. It's been more of a mailing on this one, but wherever face-to-face was appropriate or worked for the owners, I made every effort to be available to them.
And Ms. Labor, when did you first start reaching out to landowners about the proposed route and project?
I started in October of 2019, on the north part out of the Nesset substation. And I generally, from there, I think it took me a month or two to work down to the Nesset or the North Shore substation area. So early or late 2019, everyone had been contacted.
Thank you. And generally speaking, again, how many times do you attempt to interact with each landowner on the proposed route about the project?
I would say generally many times. I would say a minimum of 5 or 6 times. And there's even if there's an attempt made, a follow-up call, mailings, it's pretty persistent.
How are landowner requests or comments handled?
Every landowner request or comment is handled with sincere, I take that information and I look at that with the team. Bobby Nassett is the project manager, our construction, the other team members who do the design, as well as our environmental staff, and see if there's any way to handle some movement if they need it in a different part of the pasture. We some area, like we had a planned cabin, move it away from that. We would like it in this fence line. We would like it out of this fence line. So a lot of different requests, and those are each handled individually. And all of that information is taken to the team and we do everything we can to do what we can to mitigate the issue that's been brought forth. Of course, it's a linear project, so not everything can be fully addressed, but we make every attempt.
Thank you. Ms. Labor, how many total landowners' properties would be crossed with the project? And what percent of the easements has Basin Electric acquired? And that would be percentage of landowners, not percentage of acreage, or both, if you.
Yeah, so percentages is, you can, I'm just gonna do numbers because I think percentages can get wonky and we can make ourselves sound different. So we have 55 landowners, and of those, 50 of them have executed an easement.
Thank you. Would you please generally describe the proposed route?
Yes, and perhaps for this, the project route map, Exhibit 6, might be most, I know you've seen this one in previous testimony. So in this alignment going east-west, I did start at the Nesset substation, and so I'll work east from there. I acquired survey permission through what that is the White Earth Valley, and we had to do a little minor adjustments through some very large to span some water features, which is why it says it's angle 0.5, even though it looks pretty straight. So in that area, it was acquiring the 150-foot wide easements for the H-frame structures until we got to the Angle Point 5. At that point, we worked with the landowners. This is all pasture land, essentially. So the landowners were okay with having a diagonal in here. And I worked with the owners to align basically as we go into the next township, which is 15693 to the south, to align on a 16th line. That actually worked out really well for property ownership south and just staying on some property lines and fence lines and out of various hay fields and other operations. And it was cleaner for the owners that were in there. And then when we got into Section 8, which is near Angle Point 10, there was a little maneuvering around a few water bodies. And there were some constraints. We had to cross Burlington Northern Santa Fe's railroad. So they're pretty specific about that operation. So there's a few more angles just to get over the railroad. And then at Angle Point 10, we then recovered from the adjustments due to that alignment and got it onto a quarter line alignment. And that alignment we were able to follow until we get to Angle Point 19 in Township 15593. That worked out generally well with those owners. It was, again, property lines, it field splits. I had a lot of receptive owners for the quarter line alignment. And that also, when in the preliminary discussions with the DOT, was appropriate for that Highway 2 crossing in those for those other land rights that are around there. And then from Angle Point 19, we proceed south. And the adjustment there to the 16th line to the east was due to a lot of infrastructure, oil infrastructure that was on the quarter line. So we had to avoid that. And again, on the 16th line there was field splits and some ownership change, not everywhere, but in some of those. And that had the greatest amount of landowner concurrence that would work. And then as we went towards Angle Point 22 to the east, that alignment worked the best for the state of North Dakota as well as the adjoining property owners. As it leaves the pad spacing and the things that are important for the North Dakota Trust Lands to be the fiduciary. They definitely reviewed all that, and that was what would work best. Then in Section 14, which is where Angle Point 22 is, we proceed generally south and east to get to the substation, trying to avoid a very large water body in Section 23 and 24, and staying kind of threading the needle between occupied residences and eventually back to some trust lands in Section 36 and then tying into the substation.
Thank you. I have no further questions of this witness.
Mr. Johnson.
So the five remaining landowners, are discussions and negotiations still ongoing, or have they stalled out?
I believe they're, in my opinion, they're ongoing.
Okay. Throughout the project, are landowners updated as to status and other things like, do you continually update them on where you're at with construction, when you're going to be on their property, different things like that?
When we move, when there is a we have a date and we're ready to construct, what I'll do is I will send a letter out to everyone letting them know approximately when we'll start, so they have something in writing with my contact information, as well as Basin Electric generally has a construction coordinator who's on site to monitor the construction, and I'll give them that information as well. So if they notice or see something odd, they know who to contact no matter what. And then wherever we actually start, like if we start near the substation or whatever, wherever we physically start, I make contacts to those people immediately. There's a lot of people, so I try to not irritate everyone all at once, just let them know when we're going to be out there.
Sure. I guess I don't have any further questions.
Mr. Shook?
No questions, thank you.
Commissioner Christman.
What's the 116th line?
The quarter line. So if you split the quarter in exactly in half. Isn't it? Okay, so maybe my math.
Right down the middle of a quarter.
Middle of an
80.
Yes.
So it's a fourth of the way through the quarter.
Correct. Like approximately 1,200 feet-ish.
And point of why that works so well is what? I mean, I see it gets away from the section line rights of way and stuff, but it seems like a long way in as opposed to, you know, just enough inside the fence line to... It seems like that's traditionally a lot of this stuff has gone. It sounds like you're going a pretty long ways in from the section lines.
Thank you, Commissioner Christman. That's a great point. What I guess what some people don't understand is, you know, we're high voltage reliability. We don't use the right of way for the county as part of our right of way. So, you know, 125 feet, we'd have to be offset from the county right of way plus. Specifically in 155-93, there is a lot of pipeline infrastructure that runs in along that section line. So we'd have to be offset from them as well. And that kind of puts you, it can very much make the siting turn into something where it's very much in a strange place in your field. And in today's world where people have, you know, headers that, and sprayers that fold out and, you know, have exponential amount of reach. It seems like the more they can plan for it by being not as close to a turning radius, that they can still operate their large machinery and we won't impede them and make kind of a blank spot because they're trying to maneuver during a turn and getting their sprayer or their cultivator, whatever they have. And specifically on this one, like in section 8 and 17, that it just naturally turned into a property line split, as well as in township 156-93, people tend to own like the 40s or the 80s on either side. So there's existing fence lines and property shift. So the owners understand that they're only taking half of a structure. So it tends to be a little more amenable.
Thanks for explaining that. And then, so you have 50 of 55 landowners have signed. One of the five that are unsigned is the Department of Trust Lands, correct?
That is not correct. I apologize. Well, I have two married couples, so that is four signatures. And then I have two individual signatures that I need from like just one person where I just need one signature. So I guess it's four properties for easement packages. Plat.
Right. Yeah, that's a track I was on.
Right, the track.
There are five easements that you need.
Mm-hmm.
And is that counting the trust lands? And so there's four other private easements that you need, or five private easements that you need?
Four private and one trust lands.
Okay. And then there's 26.5 miles total. How many miles of that do you have easements for approximately, or how many miles do these other five properties consist of?
I don't have that number exact.
I would be curious if you could provide so two things.
Mm-hmm.
How many miles is the total that the easements are still outstanding? And then whatever that total is, how much of that is Department of Trust lands and how much of it is private?
Okay. And can we submit that?
Commissioner Christman, would you like that as a late filed exhibit or is that something that Bobby would know off the top of his head?
However, it could be provided. And even if, you know, I'm not talking about to the feet or like
okay.
the within and that, something real precise, just however it's convenient to get it, an approximation.
And we'll take another break during this proceeding. And at that time, if you can find the answer and bring the person up to answer it, that would be ideal. But if we can't, then we'll go with the late filed exhibit.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you, Shauna.
Thank you.
Commissioner Crosius.
Good morning, Ms. Labor. It is, I believe it's still morning. So the nearest occupied residence, that it would be 900 feet from the center line of the route. Is that correct? Or the edge of the right of way?
It's somewhat general because when we do the exclusion, we just ensure that from the edge of the right-of-way to any occupied residence and the edge, you know, that it exceeds 500 feet. So as long as I've met that criteria, anything else has been a general measurement as opposed to a surveyed measurement.
Do you know, is that a participating landowner?
There are two of them that are approximately 900 feet and both of them are participating.
On the five remaining, and our job is not to get into the easement process. We don't regulate easements, but we do want to see that they're obtained. But just generally speaking, what would the nature of the objections be? And maybe that's not even a fair way to classify it. Maybe it's placement, maybe it's something else, but can you just give a... generally speaking, what the challenges are?
Sure. So on two of them, it is compensation related and not a routing issue. Or if they have not objected to the route, it has only been a compensation problem. So that's a separate issue. On the remaining two owners, it is my understanding that it is a routing issue. And that they would prefer to not have the transmission line on their property.
Okay. All right. And the reason I ask again isn't to get into how you negotiate. That's between a private party and another private party. But just trying to get a sense of how far away are you from getting the final easements in place just getting a better feel for that. I had asked about seasonal ag considerations when you're working with property owners that are involved in agriculture. Can you just explain a little bit how you work with them during harvest season or spring planting, whatever it might be?
Sure. I have done the reclamation and construction process with Basin Electric since 2011. And the practice that we've done is whenever they've had cattle and, you know, specifically even on this alignment, I have a letter agreement with a landowner that when they have cattle in there that we're going to fence it. We have an alternative fencing plan to ensure that their cattle we're not relying on the contractor to always close the gate because it's a contractor. It's hard. So a lot of the consideration has to do with cattle and how do we contain them, especially in areas where we're on the quarter line or a property line and there is a fence line that we need to remove. In those areas, I've worked with the landowners and they've used a different pasture just for the time that we're in there. And then we will temporarily put wooden kind of slats and stuff to mend the fence until at the end when we do reclamation, we come in and do a very very well installed fence around the structures to make sure that the cattle and the structure can coexist and not have issues. So with cattle, it's pretty extensive if they're a cattle or, you know, a rancher, just to make sure that their operation is made whole during construction and after. With agricultural constraints, so the problem is sometimes the construction schedule is the construction schedule. So some landowners, they will choose in that area not to seed because they know that we're going to be in there during the harvest area time or something, and they're just going to wait for me to reclaim it. I'll pay them 100%. Loss of that area that they don't farm as a result of us impeding their farming operation. And then when we reclaim it, we then do additional damage settlements. So usually for the crop, it's more of a compensation addition and trying to work with them of what would work the best for their operation.
Okay, thank you. And then the final question, in your testimony, I believe, you had talked about weed control both during, after construction. How long do you typically, is the answer in terms of weed control as long as it takes to get things to where they should be again after the grass is established, or is it a 12-month window or a 24-month window? Is it a set time period, or is it based on need?
It is not a set time period. It is exactly based on need. I am still, we have areas near Williston that we're still handling weed issues and continuing on, and that was constructed in, 5 or 6 years ago. So we continue to monitor noxious weeds. That is our duty. And wherever there are not, our maintenance group has a noxious weed. They hire a contractor to basically any noxious weeds we handle. But construction is tricky a lot of times because the land is so disturbed. You'll get more noxious weed or more weeds in general. So that we come back at a minimum of 3 times and do 3 different sprayings has been in all of our past contracts. So I would imagine that would be in this one. And generally that has worked in, 99% of the cases where we have grasslands, where the due diligence of just maintaining it and making sure that we don't get out of control, that we've been able to establish the grass.
Do you do anything in terms of construction equipment and the contractors you work with, that when their equipment is being brought in, that it is clean and not caked with mud from another location? Do you advise them in any way?
I would have to defer to Bobby Nassett on that. I think that's a construction thing that he puts in the contract, but that is not something that I oversee.
Okay. And then I think I told you 2 questions ago, that was my final question, but this will be the final, I promise.
Sir.
Can you describe, in working with the landowners on this project, I've heard the term, or not even heard the term, I'm aware of the term pipeline fatigue. A lot of development in this area in particular, as well as other parts of the oil patch. Can you just explain the sensitivity to easements that you may have experienced during this process?
Specifically for this project?
Just easements in general.
In general. So in Northwest North Dakota, it definitely has been challenging for the landowners because right-of-way agents are knocking on their door and they're trying to, pull a calf out. They're trying to harvest. I can't meet with you. I'm in a tractor. So I'm trying to meet with them on the edge of a field, seeing if something will work because I don't want to impede on what they're doing. But it's so hard because I know that there's a lot going on and they have to spatially understand, like, where do you want to be? And, I have all these other things going on. I know that the landowners have to manage their property well. That's you know, most of them are very diligent with their property. So I understand that it's not easy on them. And I just try to be as accommodating as I can to still, I mean, we still are delivering power. And I work for a company that I believe delivers power effectively, and that it's something that it's a good that we need in rural North Dakota. So because I know the product is needed by all of us, I just try to convey that and work with people wherever they're at.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. No other questions?
Any further questions? Ms. Merkins.
Not at this time, Your Honor, but during our break, I do intend to find the Sir Christman or Commissioner Christman's request on mileage for those properties of which we do not have easements.
Any further questions?
Your Honor.
Seeing none, you may step down. Do you have any further witnesses?
No, Your Honor.
Is there anyone you would like to recall or anyone that the commissioners would like to recall? Not at this time? Okay, well, then we're going to move on to the public testimony portion of the hearing. And the public testimony is a portion where you'll come forward and sit at the chair there, and you'll be sworn in, and you'll be give us a statement or tell the commission what you want them to hear, and then you'll be subject to some questioning. When you come up, I may ask you where you're from or to spell your name. If your name is anything beyond Tom, I'll probably ask you to spell it, because I'm not very good at that. So with that, is there anyone from the public who wishes to come testify, a brave soul perhaps? There we have one right there. Please come forward.
Hello.
Hello, your name, please.
My name is Leah Johnson Ellis.
And where are you from? Williston, I see.
I'm from Williston, and I am in-house legal counsel for Montrell Williams Electric Cooperative. So I'm here on the co-op's behalf.
Okay. And you were here for my previous warnings as to perjury?
I was.
So you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
I do.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I will. I do.
You may begin.
Thank you. So, as you well know, Montrell Williams Electric Cooperative is a not-for-profit, member-owned electric distribution cooperative that serves northwestern North Dakota. Basin Electric is here today to support the load growth of our Montreal County members, and the co-op supports Basin Electric's Neset to North Shore 230 kV project. This proposed transmission line will help address the capacity issues and restore local system reliability to an acceptable level. And just to add on that a little bit, I know there was a question about the length of our project, which is to the south of this, and it's our 115 kV line is approximately, it's just between 20 and 21 miles.
Any questions, Ms. Merkins?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Johnson?
No, Your Honor.
Commissioner Christman?
I do not. But thank you for providing that information.
You're very welcome.
Commissioner Crosses.
No questions, but thank you, Leah, for being here, and thank you for the work that Montrell Williams does. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for your testimony. You may step down.
Thank you.
Do we have any other testimony from the public? A man in the back will come forward. Your name, sir?
My name is Charlie Sorensen.
And you're from Ross?
Correct.
S-O-N or S-E-N?
S-O-N.
And you were here for my warnings as to perjury, so you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
Yes.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
You may begin.
As stated, my name is Charlie Sorensen. I'm a farmer from Montreal County in Ross, North Dakota. I am an owner, one of the owners of Basin Electric Power Cooperative through my ownership in Montreal Williams REC, which is my power provider. My annual power consumption exceeds $20,000 a year, and I fully understand the need for more transmission lines. Just a few weeks ago, I was a panelist for the Midwest Governors Association's Mid-Grid 2035 workshop discussing the siting of transmission lines. I, as a landowner, have granted dozens of easements on my property to energy, power, utility, telecommunication, and water entities across my land. In fact, just last Friday, I signed an easement for rural water that was a new 2-mile line going across my property. I own property in Section 8 of Township 15593 that will be impacted by 3/4 of a mile of the proposed Basin Electric transmission line. I object to the proposed location of this line as a landowner and agricultural operator of the property that is impacted by the proposed transmission line. I first learned about this line 2 years ago when the landman for Basin Electric approached me with a map for the line. Later, they came back and determined that the route didn't affect me because I didn't own any land on that route. Then sometime after that, I was approached with the second map, and this showed a power line crossing me in the Section 8 that I own part of, 1/4 of a mile from the west end. I suggested the line should follow a road, an existing corridor, a section line, or an existing transmission line. Then it was in October of 2020, I received a phone call from the Basin Electric requesting my township's approval for crossing permits. And at that time, a map was emailed to me. This was the first time that I saw the location of the line across my property. This time it was in Section 8, 1/4 of a mile from the east end. When I followed up with Basin Electric to tell them that it appeared that this line was to cross my property 1/4 of a mile from the edge, they acknowledged this change and asked if I would sign an easement that hadn't been sent to me yet. I told them that I wasn't interested in signing the easement, but they proceeded to go forward with the permitting process anyway. In each contact I had with Basin Electric about this line, the route proposed has always been preliminary. I have an email of which I will give you from Shauna Labor dated October 1st, 2020, with a map identifying the line as preliminary. And that was the map that was the first indication to me that of the route that it currently is on. There was never a request for an easement prior to that. I was given no opportunity to voice my concerns about this line during the planning of its location. This contract contradicts the direct testimony pre-submitted and submitted today by representatives of Basin Electric. In his testimony, Mr. Sorley stated, landowner preferences for the proposed route location strongly influenced the selection of the project route. And Ms. Labor's testimony is where feasible, many reroutes took place along this line to minimize landowner concerns. It appears to me Basin Electric modified the route to accommodate some of my neighbors and refused to work with me because they had to use me as a link to accommodate those willing neighbors. This results in the proposed placement of the transmission line in a location that severely impacts and limits my ability to farm land in Section 8. I object to this line location for many reasons. The proposed line is an entirely green field on my property. It cuts through a 440-acre tract perpendicular to the direction of normal field operations. My equipment is large, with widths up to 132 feet, and I would have difficulty navigating around poles in the middle of my field. Avoiding poles will require unnecessary and environmentally damaging overapplications of fertilizers and pesticides and other crop inputs. I have a history of applying fungicides to small grains and pulse crops on this field with an airplane. Having a transmission line in the middle of this field will result in a large swath of my field where an aerial application will not be possible. This lack of fungicide application on such a large swath will result in an annual loss of yield to the entire field of up to 25%. The poles in the middle of my field will create islands of non-crop, which then turn into islands for noxious weed production and harmful insect habitat. These islands cannot be sprayed due to their potential conflict with the equipment and the risk to the pole, and also start the process of developing chemically resistant weed species. Such islands of non-crop will have a negative impact on the crops growing in the rest of the field. These problems could be minimized. Basin Electric is willing to work with me on the placement of the proposed transmission line. This particular field where the line is proposed to cross has provided valuable information for on-farm fertilizer, variety, and insect mitigation trials for me for the last 15 years. But it would be unable to provide that information going forward with a transmission line cutting across it. Eliminating this option has a negative impact on my entire farming operation. This runs contrary to the placement criteria stated by Mr. Nassett in his direct testimony, where he claimed placement was determined in such a manner as to accommodate existing land uses and minimize disturbances to cultivated areas. I have two employees that have their private pilot's license, and we have discussed installing a grass runway along the edge of my field, this field that the transmission line is proposed to cross. The placement of this line does not account for that potential future use, despite Mr. Nassett's testimony that such uses were considered in designing the proposed route. Much of my farm labor begins as unskilled workers. Adding obstacles such as poles to my field creates unnecessary risks and liabilities for myself, my workers, and to the poles themselves. In fact, in the last 20 years, I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to remove obstacles from my fields to make my farming operation more efficient, environmentally safe, and profitable. I have even paid my local electric provider, Montreal Williams REC, to reroute distribution lines around my fields in my never-ending quest to keep my farm profitable, efficient, and safe. I have negotiated dozens of easements on my land with energy and utility companies in a manner that minimizes impacts to me and my farming operation while still allowing for the installation of their lines. Process Basin has failed to even begin with me on my property. Basin Electric's proposed route completely takes away from my previous efforts to eliminate obstacles. As the easement is currently proposed, federal FIFRA laws, which are backed up by the North Dakota Pesticide Act, would prevent my lawful application of any crop protection product in this field, due to Basin Electric's employers or contractors being allowed to enter the property with no warning to inspect or maintain the line. If Basin Electric decides to inspect the poles during the growing season, which they have every right to do under the easement they have proposed, I could be charged with a felony, face jail time, and be fined thousands of dollars for violating the re-entry restrictions found on the label of the pesticides and herbicides that I routinely use in my field. There are multiple better options for crossing my property with a transmission line. This line could be placed underground, thus eliminating all of my concerns. It could also be placed along any pre-existing road such as, or section line such as 93rd Avenue, along the east side of 95th Avenue, or either side of 94th Avenue. All five of these options would nearly eliminate the numerous environmental concerns and would provide a much more manageable route for my farming operation while meeting Basin's needs to cross my land. Please wait to approve the transmission line until a proper route is established, my landowner concerns are addressed, and all easements are signed. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
You said you had a document you wanted to enter in as evidence?
Yes, and I have written testimony, which includes that email that I'm referring to.
I take it the first part here is your written testimony that you just went through, and the second is the email that follows, and I will mark those letters A and B, and you have moved for their omission. Do you have any objection, or do you need a little more time, or?
I have no objection.
Okay. Any objection?
No objection.
Hearing no objection, I will admit A and B into evidence. Ms. Merkins, do you have any questions for this witness?
Yes, Your Honor, I do.
Proceed.
Mr. Sorensen, thank you for being here. When you mentioned in your written statement, or when you read your written statement, you mentioned that the first time you had discussed the route of this line was in October of 2020. Is that correct?
That was the first time that I saw the current route.
Okay. And when we speak of contacts with Basin Electric, that's one thing. When was the first time that Basin Electric staff attempted to contact you and discuss this route?
That route was presented to me. It was never discussed.
And how many times did a representative of Basin Electric attempt to contact you to discuss the route?
I've had several discussions, and like I say, there were several different routes. In terms of this route, I don't remember. I don't remember it being discussed. And I don't take day-to-day tabs of my, I don't keep a journal of my calls, but this route was, I was shocked because the way the project was presented to me was a kind of exploratory fashion. I was never requested to have the route on my, or the line be placed on me. It was, here's a map, what do you think of it? And that was in the first two instances. And then when this map showed up, I was shocked. I had assumed the route was gonna go around me, I didn't know. But I received this as a township supervisor. I didn't receive it as a landowner. And that's a flawed process. But nonetheless, here we are, and we need to find a better, you know, we need to find a route that works.
Did you receive voicemails, personal in-person contacts, or letters from any Basin Electric staff regarding this project?
Going back 2 years, yes.
Okay, thank you. And when you received those contacts, How did you respond?
Well, I guess I responded fairly calmly, and the ones that appeared to be problematic, I said, you know, that route doesn't work for me. We need to look for a better route.
So in the event of a voicemail or an attempted personal contact or a certified letter, did you respond to each of those? Or what percentage of those contacts that were attempted to be made did you respond to, just generally speaking?
I would say most all of them.
Okay. You mentioned, I believe, was it the FIFRA, your concerns with that federal?
Yes.
If Basin were to amend its draft easement to in a way where it would allow for you to not violate that law, in your opinion, is that something that could be revised in an easement that you would later sign?
Yes, as long as we place it along an existing corridor or underground, that would take care of that. So, yes.
Okay. The route is as presented, my understanding, has been in place for quite some time. So I am surprised. I am surprised to hear that you first saw the map at the Debbing Township meeting.
It was emailed to me on October 1st from Shauna Labor.
Okay. Thank you. And Mr. Sorensen, did you respond to this email?
Yes.
I have no further questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Johnson.
Just one question. How many structures would be located on your property with this current route?
I'm not completely sure. I have 3/4 mile there. That's probably around 6 or so.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Shook? Just real quick, so how much of Section 8 is your property?
So I own 440 acres. I own the north half. I own the northeast quarter of the southeast quarter, and I own the west half of the southwest quarter.
Thank you very much. No further questions.
Commissioner Chrisman.
And so I think to ask that in just a different manner, this crossing in Section 8, for a half a mile, it would be entirely on yours in the north half of Section 8. And then the next quarter of a mile, it would be kind of right down the edge of yours. You'd be on the east side of it and your neighbor on the west side.
Yeah, I think that's...
And you named like alternative routes if it has to be above ground, and you mentioned some rural, I believe, avenues, or maybe it was streets, but they're not on my map. So was what you were suggesting just to be over closer to the various section lines when you said that?
State that again.
You had in your testimony mentioned several alternative routes for it, and I think it was avenues that you were mentioning, but those aren't on my map.
Okay.
So was the gist of that it just should be closer to one of these section lines that I see on my map?
So
this, opposed to further out in the field?
So if you can envision this, this line crossing is 1/4 mile from 94th Avenue, the north-south road, which is a very well-traveled corridor. I own land on both sides of 94th Avenue. I own the entire Section 9. So it could be placed on, I mean, either side, and we're still achieving the goal of going north and south. Then we could go to the far west end of section 8 and stay on me and go an entire mile to cross. Or we could go on the far east side of section 9 and go an entire mile. We're still within, you could say, the broader corridor of the direction that we're going to move this power line.
And so when you suggest that, well, you said that the one right on the east side of Section 8 is a well-traveled corridor. So I'm imagining a gravel road, but that it's bladed high and a good quality gravel road.
I wouldn't call it a good quality gravel road, but it's an extremely heavily traveled road.
How wide? Do you have your land fenced, or is it? How wide is the right-of-way on that road, do you know?
Well, the right-of-way is statutory at 33 feet on either side.
The county hasn't acquired additional easement.
It is not a county road. It's a township road. I would say the surface of that road is probably in the neighborhood of 40, 50 feet wide. That's the oil field does to our roads. The likelihood that that's going to be a county road someday is probably pretty high.
So that gets sort of to my question. So when you suggest these other routes closer to one of these section lines, how far away are you imagining?
On that one, it's state statutory county requirement would be 75 feet with that road. I mean, I'm on our township board too. So going forward, what I can envision is if that were to be a county road, then we follow under the state statute, which states you have to be 75 feet from the road. So that's where I would expect it to be placed there. The farther west route would be is an unimproved section line. So we're at 33, as with the other section line on the east side.
Thank you. I have no other questions.
Commissioner Crosses.
Just looking at the clock, what time are we at? Your Honor.
It's noon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Sorensen. I wanted to make sure I got that right. Brian or Victor, could you do me a favor, or does the company have a map, an extra map? Yeah, thank you, Victor. And to make sure I'm looking at the correct parcel of land, is this
9 and 10, 12?
So
9 of 12. Is that correct, Mr. Sorensen? This is the property you're referencing?
Yes, I believe so. So this would be, I guess we have structures 128 through 134 are on my property.
Okay. All right. So could you had talked about the width of your equipment. This is a little difficult for me, but would the line of the transmission line placement be with on the cultivated land, or would it be off of the cultivated land?
This would be placed on cultivated land, except for looks like structure 128. And actually that's cultivated too. It's all on cultivated land.
Is there anything cultivated that isn't reflected? When I'm looking at the cultivated, it seems like it is the tan, but it could also be that some of the crops haven't matured on.
And this based on the crops and the timing of the photo, but mine is all green. So I don't really like these maps the way they look different than my maps, but we can see that orange line to the right. Mm-hmm. I believe that's an existing pipeline.
Okay.
So that's along 94th Avenue. And so this is 1/4 mile east or west of 94th Avenue.
Okay. And then towers 128 through 134 that you referenced, are those all on your property?
Take that back. It's through 132 is my property.
Through 132. Okay. So 133, 134 would not be on
That's correct, yep.
That would be someone else's tillable in terms of ownership anyway?
Yeah, so there was the way the land was homesteaded, created 80s and 40s and such. That's why it's that way.
But,
Your Honor, may I point the commission to the updated map that addresses this, what we, the site we are discussing?
You may.
As we, I believe we're currently looking at figure 1-4 from the application.
Yep.
A more accurate map that would provide a schematic of this area is found in Exhibit 7, page 10 of 12. I mention that because this would be the updated structure map. You may recall that the structure decreased between the time the application was submitted and this structure location was filed. So I apologize for that inconvenience.
And what exhibit are you?
It would be Exhibit 7, the route and structure locations, page 10 of 12.
It's in this white book here. Okay, I can see it. All right. Well, it seems like there is the opportunity for some movement in terms of basin working with you, and again, we don't become involved in the easement negotiations, but easement acquiring easements is a part of the decision making process. So, I appreciate you answering the questions. I wanted a better understanding of how the land lays, where your ownership lies, etc. So. I don't have any other questions. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Any further questions? Seeing none, you may step down. Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify today? The lady in the yellow sweater or sweatshirt. Your name, ma'am?
My name is Elaine Vockel, and my husband and John and I own land in section 23 and 26.
Okay.
In 5593.
Your address is from Ross, and it's, yep, Vockel with a V.
V-A-C-H-A-L.
Okay. And you were here for my previous warnings as to perjury, correct?
Correct.
So you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
I do.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
You may begin.
Okay. As I said, my husband and I have owned land in Section 23 and 26. We oppose the project for going in on those two sections for the reasons of, to give you a little background, my husband and I have owned it since 72. The family has owned it, the land, since homestead time. Our grandparent, my husband's grandparents, have the deed from Taft, present Taft, of 1904. So we've been, the family's been on the land since then. And in Section 23, our concern is we have tried to be good stewards of the land and respect certain things. We have teepee rings in the section of 23. So we have never disturbed this land. It is sod, original prairie sod. And so for that reason, we don't want anybody going across that land for any reason. And we, in the past, we've been able to protect that for that reason. And in Section 26, as you can see, it's a diagonal going across that land. And we own that north part up there on Section 26. And as previously stated by others, the conditions of machinery. We have gotten quite large with our machinery. So like our one seater is 72 feet. So to get around the poles around there in that distance there would be cumbersome, I'm sure. And that is some of our most expensive tax-paying land. It's agricultural, cultivated. And so with that being said is why we are opposing to that, having that going across those two parts of our land there.
Anything
our
else?
Son is the fourth, let's see, Peter, Louis, John. Our son is the fourth generation, and our grandson is also now an operator of the farmland. And he is the fifth generation, and we're hoping to be able to take care of the land so that generations from now, they can still farm and maintain this land. So if there's any questions, I'll try to answer.
Are there any questions?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
Johnson, hold on. Other people get to ask you questions.
Okay.
No questions, Your Honor.
Commissioner Christman.
I'm sorry, but I was taking a few more notes yet from Mr. Sorensen's testimony, and you've discussed 23 and 26, but yep. I did not catch the township and range, so I still not found the map.
It's 155-93, section 23 and 26.
Okay, I was on the right map then.
And I'm sure that's probably why they want to come across those, because we've been able to divert any kind of pipeline so they don't have all that stuff if they have to go around. And of course the body of water that's on section 23. Although maybe this year it wouldn't bother because I think it's pretty dry. But we do take a good deal in pride of being able to be the stewards of this land.
Did you hear the testimony? I don't remember which witness it was regarding their work with the State Historic Preservation Office to work around and not disturb teepee rings or other cultural artifact sites.
I heard part of that. Yeah, some of it I missed.
Did that give you any comfort that the state is also in many people's mind overly aggressive at
at keeping an eye on those things, but that well, they have expertise in that and are working on it and actually will not approve this unless Basin would take proper steps to protect those features.
Right. I was trying to reason out, you know, like they were talking about going section line and quarter lines and township lines and stuff like that. And it appears as though it goes right straight through it, section 23, like right down the center. And I feel that that would be really close to the teepee rings. I'm sure why they is because of the I call it a slough, most of us do. why the Indians probably were just there for a short period of time, but the rings are there, and it's a little bit of a hilly, and it sounds like they take quite a bit of right away. Plus, you know, I don't know if they need guidelines or whatever. And our concern too is probably health. I know that I'm not very informed on the health of situation as far as for cattle, because it's pasture is what it is. As far, I said, all I know is that when you go to Bismarck and you go under the big high lines, it goes, your radio does. So to me, it just doesn't seem like it would be really safe to be under there, but for any length of time. Yeah. So those are concerns that I have, or I should say we do.
Sure. Yeah, I just... I won't give any advice. no other questions, but thank you for being here and pointing it out. Where it goes through your property. Appreciate it.
Commissioner Crosses.
Well, good afternoon, Elaine. Just one.
Thank you.
I think it'll just be one question. On section 23, section 26, the property you own, do you see this, or when you're looking at this, is there a workable solution in terms of route on your property, or is it you're opposed to it because there isn't another scenario that would work for you?
Well, you know, if they would, you know, like I guess I just think that if they would follow the roads, you know, to me that would be less invasive to the farmers and the landowners. You know, if you like our old line that is there, it's next to the road, you know, and so we don't you don't farm close to those poles, at least in our area. I know out east they they farm everything, even the ditch and everything, but we don't. So to me that is more reasonable to have that if they would follow the road line. And I said maybe if they just went straight on from section 5 down to section 1 and then come straight down the other way. You know, I don't know. I'm assuming that on 25 would be what we call Pearl Valley or 90th or Highway 5, whatever. It's a paved road. Okay. It doesn't look to me like it would be any farther for the line if you take and you straighten up all those green ones, straighten them up and go across those sections and then come straight south down to that North Shore Station substation. Instead of cutting across all everybody's land there.
Okay. Well, I hope you can continue to work with the company and the company with you, and hopefully come up with some type of a resolution or a compromise that's acceptable.
Right. Hopefully we can work something out so they aren't doing anything to the teepee rings.
And good luck with the farming this year. Hopefully you'll get some rain.
My husband and I retired, so it's our son and our grandson has the operation now.
Okay, so the fourth and fifth generation?
Our grandson would be the fifth. Oh. Yep. and he's the farmer, and our son is the rancher. So
I wish them both well.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I take it there's no further questions. Oh,
I guess I'm always.
And so
you, I'm sorry.
You are excused.
All right. Thank you.
You may sit down.
Thank you for coming.
Are there any further people from the public who wish to testify? Is there anybody else besides him? I just want to make sure. I'm smelling food and it's hard for me to concentrate. Please come forward. Your name, please?
Mike Heenick.
Spell the last name for me, please.
H-Y-N-E-K.
And you're from Stanley?
I am.
Okay. And you were here for my previous admonitions as to perjury?
I was.
So you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
I do.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
You may begin.
Okay. First of all, thanks for the opportunity, making it so convenient for me to be here. I appreciate that. And having said that, the reason I'm here is I'm not a property owner. I am a tenant on where it crosses. But my real concern is, and it was one of your witnesses said, the infrastructure amount out there is ridiculous. And it is, and that's becoming a great concern for us. I own a fair amount of property right in this area. And so this will be the third substation along the road I drive every day to the farm and back, within 8 miles. Thus, there's plenty of transmission lines there already. Having said that, I understand how important it is to get this infrastructure in. Between the oil wells, saltwater disposal, substations, transmission lines, pipe yards, communication towers, it's pretty crazy out there. The pipelines is like a bowl of spaghetti. It's amazing. Having said that, my concern is, and if you guys would consider this in the future, is where this right next to my property, section 36, is state land, 15593, where it goes west to east to the substation. Along that stretch there is a single phase electric line on the north side of the road, a three phase electrical line on the south side of the road, a two-pole transmission line on the south side of the road, and now another transmission line on the south side of the road. Sooner or later, these things are going to have to get combined one way or another, or you're going to make our properties out there less desirable, which they already are by a large extent, to even be there. So take all that stuff down, put up one line, combine everything to that line, and make it right. Don't just keep putting up lines, putting up lines, putting up lines, and going through this. Use an existing easement. You know? I mean, that one transmission line isn't been there for very many years. Now we're going to have another one? I mean, it's like picket fence out there. So I challenge you folks to think down the road. I was past chairman of the Montreal County Planning and Zoning for a few years, past Mayor Stanley for 8 years through all this chaos. Looking back, there are things I regret we did. Let's not look back and see 6-7 power lines side by side by side and think we did a good job, because you're not. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Any questions?
No questions, Your Honor.
No questions.
Commissioner Chrisman.
I'm
I'm thinking about what you said, and do you have any thoughts on what potential negative impacts that could cause if everything is combined into one, where now when some work has to be done on a pole or something, now everything is out of power because you end up taking everything down for a time? Would you have any concerns about that?
Not really, to be honest with you, because I think all you're doing is increasing your risk for things to happen. You know, those things can tumble on top of each other out there, you know, from what I can tell. Wiser minds than me know these answers. I'm just giving you my concerns. And if it's possible to get this stuff condensed down, you know, I should have done that right away with the oil field. There's pipelines out there on top of pipelines, crossing pipelines. You know, no foresight whatsoever. And I just, you know, like I said, it would have been really nice to have this hearing out there so you could just look around and go, wow. Yeah. There's hundreds of oil wells within a few miles of this proposed substation and disposal, and on and on and on. And it's getting more complicated and more complicated all the time. If we could just figure out a way to get the same job done without adding more stuff.
It's an intriguing idea. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Commissioner Cautious.
You're almost off the hook, but not quite.
Ah, okay.
No, I just want to say thank you for the input. Certainly appreciate it. And I think at the beginning, as you were speaking, you mentioned making this convenient and whatnot. And really, it's up to us to thank you. Just here's the secret, but don't let it out. We have about 760,000 people we work for, bosses. So I had one in the private sector. Now I have 770,000, whatever it is. But that's something we all take very seriously. So I appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. You're excused.
Thank you.
Are there any further testifiers from the audience? Anyone? You can change your mind. Seeing no further testimony from the audience, we'll have closing remarks. Do you have any, Ms. Merkins?
I would like to recall a witness.
You may do that.
I would like to recall Mr. Bobby Nassett, please.
Thanks. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, I am. Be reminded, you're still under oath.
Thank you, sir.
You may begin.
Bobby, if we look at our Exhibit 7, route and structure locations. I'm wondering if you could just generally describe some of the difficulties that you faced in your design of the transmission line. Going through Section 8, 17, as well as Section 23 and 26. So the first would be on page 10 of 12 of the exhibit. Maybe we should just start there. If you would kindly describe some of the difficulties that you faced or considerations that you, things that you considered when selecting this route.
Sure. And one of the big challenges, obviously, is like the testimony we heard, and thank you to the landowners that provided feedback. You know, no landowners are real excited about having a transmission line on their property, and we understand that. And a lot of times in the iterations of trying to optimize the design, what satisfies one landowner is unacceptable to the adjacent one. And in the case here for Section 8, what we did is, when I think very early on, it was made clear to us, Mr. Sorensen did not want the project on his property. We did look for alternative routes. And as we went to neighboring landowners, the amount of transmission line we'd have to add to the project was increased, and they were still opposed to the line. So it was really a decision of increasing the length on a landowner that did not want to participate in the project. And as he mentioned, as you look at his property from east to west, it typically owns a full mile from north to south. So we tried to pick an area that actually minimized the amount of length. We picked the one section of the corridor that shortened that length. And yes, unfortunately, I understand that goes through his field. But as he mentioned, on the north and south side of that is right along a property line for the landowners north and south. And that's where they wanted the transmission line. So it was sort of an attempt to best fit that. And I understand that's not what's desired here from the landowner. And so we're definitely happy to look at options that we can make it work. As you know, we've got the other exclusions. A lot of times we've moved the transmission line. That's when we run into our minimum offsets from dwelling residences or pipelines or other infrastructure. And so we're trying to find a way to meet the requirements of the avoidance areas as well as we can best accommodate the landowners.
Thank you. And if we move to page 12 of 12, sections 23 and 26, as well as 25 and 36, basically the map as it is shown on page 12 of 12, if you could briefly describe some of the difficulties you encountered in that area, please.
And that one, other than, you know, it'd be helpful if these maps showed all the underground pipelines and other existing transmission. So there are corridors that are taken up that we cannot use and that we've got to keep offsets from. I think in this case, and I would maybe defer to Shauna on this one, I think we did have survey permissions for this property and did get some feedback on where they preferred the line. And so I thought we were complying with that in this case. For the line in section 23 and 26, that is.
Thank you.
And if I could add one thing, Aneen, there was a question earlier on the amount of easement in a mileage standpoint that we've acquired. Just going to close a loop on that, if that's permissible.
Yes, please.
So the state land that's pending is 1.9 miles, and the easement signed is 20.8, and the easement denied is 3.6 to date.
Bringing the total distance of the line to what distance?
That is in the 26.3 or 4 miles. So rounded there a little bit. Yeah. And one other map that might be helpful in the pre-filed exhibits was the easement status map, which is exhibit 10. So that, I guess for the commissioner's benefit, that's a map of the route, and in green is the areas that we have acquired easements, and in red are the locations that we have not, and orange lines show the pending state easements.
Thank you. I have no further questions, Your Honor.
No questions. Mr. Johnson?
No questions.
Commissioner Christman?
What was the exhibit number of that last map that showed acquired versus unacquired easements?
Exhibit 10.
I see it now. And then Mr. Hennick's thoughts on combining some of these structures into one, as long as you're working along adjacent electric lines. That seems very intriguing. And is there a way to work together with different companies? Maybe even sometimes it's the same or sister companies, but just different facilities. Who, while there is a pretty significant construction project like this going on, maybe allow the application of some of those other lines onto these structures and then be able to eliminate some other structures to
discuss that with me, please?
Yeah, it's a very good question, and it is something that we evaluate when we're routing the lines. Typically, if there are two planned circuits in the area that we know about or ones in the future, we will build our line to accommodate a future second circuit. And so recently, 345 Williston to Tioga project that we built several years ago, there's maybe 30 miles along that line that we built for double circuit capability for Montreal Williams to later add 115 kV circuit, which they have. So there's areas where we've attempted to do that. Usually when there's an existing line already there, you know, there's considerable expense in reconstructing that line and building this one as double circuits. So we're kind of paying twice there for that. So typically if we've got space, we'll build a new single circuit line for the reason that you brought up too. There's also, you know, there's trade-offs with every decision we make here, and we're not going to get it perfect, but you're now putting, you know, the maintenance of one structure owned by two entities. So there's legal requirements to overcome for that. And then also just single point of failure. You know, if a structure fails, it's especially two adjacent structures that are feeding the same substation. Or if you have a line come down or trip for some reason, it's really nice to have the other circuit to be live. So the goal here, you know, we're trying to do our best with optimizing for cost at the end of the day to the members and also keeping the system as reliable as possible.
So it is something that is considered, though? Did I understand right, or not really?
It is considered, but typically it would be considered when we have two new existing circuits planned for the same area so that we could construct them concurrently.
No other questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Crosius.
No questions.
Seeing no further questions, you may step down.
Thank you, sir.
Any further witnesses?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, we can have closing remarks. Do you have any closing remarks?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Commissioner Christman.
Well, as always, when we do these, you know, you spend time in advance of the hearing, preparing and going through it and trying to understand it as best you can. And you get out, and then it's the reason, I'm sure, why this system was evolved in the first place of going out to the point of contact and hearing from folks. And you learn a lot in these things. And I've learned a lot again on this project this morning. So thanks to the company for providing information in a pretty understandable way. I was able to have a pretty good grasp of the project coming into it, and that's not always the case with every applicant that we receive for siting authority around the state. So thank you for that. I thought the witnesses were good, and I especially want to thank the people from up here who took time out of your day to come and point out your concerns with it. It's the learning process for us, and your concerns will certainly receive consideration. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Commissioner Crosius.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for being here. It was very informative. And just as a part of the process moving forward, next steps, and I believe I referred to this at the beginning of the hearing, but we will take what was said today. We have the information already, the exhibits that were presented. We'll go into what will be one, if not more, work sessions at the commission. That is when we sit down with staff, get their opinions, their expertise on the application, and we work through the process. And it's a very lengthy process. It's a very thorough process. We hit some of the high points today, but by no means did we cover all of the ground that we will, but we have the information in front of us. So I look forward to that. It's always an interesting part of the process. A big thanks to those from the public who came and testified. That's incredibly important that we hear from you, and it's always a pleasure to travel anywhere in North Dakota. It's great to be in Stanley today. And getting out and about and meeting the people we serve is really a privilege. And one thing I would be remiss in not saying, there were some folks here with time in public service. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Soli, for your service. Greatly appreciated. So everyone have a good day, and thank you again for being here.
I understand there's no late filed exhibits anymore. And will counsel for Basin agree to prepare proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law in an order?
Yes, Your Honor.
And is 2 weeks enough?
Yes, Your Honor.
So May 20th by 5 p.m. Yes. And with that, is there any other matter that needs to be brought before the commission before we close this hearing? Seeing nothing, it is 12:40 p.m. and it's May 6, 2021, and the hearing for PU 2149 on the application of Basin for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit is closed.